Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. We are going to continue to talk about our flesh and our temperament and how they relate to one another. And again, we're talking about our flesh in terms of it being a crutch. What we develop when we're wounded, when we have an injury, is there to protect us and to help us get along while we're healing. What happens, though, is even our crutch can keep us from fully healing if we rely on it too much. And whatever temperament you have often influences the kind of wound you'll end up with. For instance, if you have siblings, odds are, though you all may have experienced the same family history growing up, the same parents, the same kinds of things that go on within families, moving, school, bad parenting. None of us have perfect parents. None of us are perfect parents. But we all experience the same circumstances, and yet we come away from that growing up time with individualized and unique wounds. And those wounds are because we each have a unique temperament. Even if they all fall under the same category, like melancholy, you're not all, nobody's pure anything. We're all a combination of all the above, the sanguine, choleric, phlegmatic, and melancholy. We're all a combination of those, but we're all a unique combination of those. So we bring our own beliefs and filters and what's important to us to our history. And so even twins can come away from having the exact same experience with different wounds. And each wound, for each wound, we develop a crutch. It protects us, it helps us cope with our circumstance, our situation. Now, some of us go through terrible experiences growing up. Maybe we are orphaned, our parents are killed, or someone commits suicide, or there's violence in the house, or just terrible, you know, drugs, alcohol, terrible situations growing up. Obviously, that's going to leave terrible wounds and beliefs about who we are, who others are, and who God is. And we determine our identity very often from what's going on around us, how we are treated. And for that person growing up in that situation, that's a 10. That's their 10. You grew up in a single family home where the mother was on drugs and ended up being murdered. And you find out your father's been in prison. Is in prison, and so you're farmed out to somebody in the family that will take you. So you may believe you're unwanted. And in a sense, that's absolutely accurate. But that's true only of certain situations. That's not true of God, and that's not true of others. So that experience is a 10 for that child. But on the other side of the spectrum, say someone grew up in a very wealthy family where both parents were there and both parents did everything they could. But something in that child, perhaps the one rejection they had, maybe by a teacher that said, well, honey, you'll never amount to anything as an artist. And that wound may have been in that one area that was so important to that child that that person, that child grows up to be a person that never believes anybody wants them, that they're unaccepted. The one thing they wanted to do, they'll never be good at. And so that, for that child, can believe just as strongly, that feel just as strongly that lie, that rejection, as the other person that grew up in a truly terrible situation. So that child growing up in the drug family, the single family, drug-infested family, has a 10 experience. And the child even growing up in a wealthy and affluent situation where they have everything and it's safe and secure and the parents love them and they're doing everything they can, they still have a 10 experience. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's this bad. Every one of us has a number 10 experience. That's why we don't compare how bad our experience is to how bad someone else's experience is. Whatever your number 10 is, it's a legitimate number 10. So we don't excuse our wounds. We don't say, well, at least my mom wasn't murdered. Or at least I knew my parents loved me. I don't have anything to complain about. Whatever your wounds are, they're legitimate wounds. And you take them to God. You don't excuse them. You don't say, well, at least they aren't as bad. They aren't crippling me that much. I'm still able to function. And so what if I've never gotten over this rejection or that anger or that fear? We don't excuse our wounds. And one of the big reason is that God will not allow us to. He does not want you to live your life with wounds, because those wounds are all about lies. We receive a wound in a moment with a hurtful word, with a hurtful hit, but we live creating lies around the wounds. Well, I must have deserved it. I must have done something wrong. I should have been there to protect my mom. She wouldn't have been murdered if I had been there for her. Or, here I've been given everything I could possibly want, and I'm still a failure. What a bad child I must be. I must not be worth anything. I can never let anybody know what a failure I really am. And I'm going to live my life trying to maintain a facade and do things that I really don't want to do in order to keep people from knowing what a failure I really am. So we may be wounded in a moment, but it can affect our entire lifetime because we allow those lies to be created instead of taking our wounds to God. You're going to be wounded. You were wounded in the past. You're probably going to be wounded today, and you'll definitely be wounded in your future. That's not the big deal. It's going to God to get the wounds healed. Jesus was wounded, but he never developed a crutch. He never needed one. It's not because he was never wounded. It's because he knew how to go to his Father. He didn't have any magic within him that prevented the wounds from hurting him. And he didn't have the magic within him to heal himself. He went to his Father to be healed. And it was a learning process. That's where you and I need to put in the work. Not just to get those wounds healed, but to learn how to go to the Father to get our wounds healed. So we're wounded. Those lies develop around those wounds, and we receive the wounds according to our temperament. And if we don't get those wounds healed, the lies develop, and we start living our life accommodating our lies. Now, you and I don't think we believe lies. We have beliefs. But if we've never allowed the Lord to bring those beliefs to the light of day, and if we will never allow those beliefs to be challenged, we will never be freed from them. We will always be using our beliefs as a crutch. And while we're on crutches, we can't be free. And that's what God wants for us. That's what God wants for every single one of us, is to live free, complete, entire, and whole, spirit, soul, and body, here on this earth now. So he's not going to let you settle for it. You may spend the rest of your life pushing him away. And one of the reasons that that happens, especially in Western religions, Christianity, is because we have this idea that that's all God expects us to, is endure. Be the martyr, the sacrifice. Just get through this life, and then everything will be fine in the, you know, when we get to heaven. But when we start looking at it, that's not God's idea. It was never his intent to push back the freedom that he has for us now to some other time. He is a now God, and he wants us free to enjoy him, to learn what we're supposed to be learning here, so we don't have to take it with us into the next thing. So again, we deal with our temperament, the way, however it is. And when we see the areas of our temperament that rub people the wrong way, or that, and this is, again, God bringing it to our attention. And he very often does it by allowing us to experience the consequences of our temperament, of our actions, of our beliefs. And we're going to experience those consequences in the three areas: our financials, our physical, our health, and our relationships. And when we find a constant struggle in an area, or an area where we are disappointed or challenged, or we never feel like we're going to get a handle on an area, odds are that's God trying to get your attention. And it's generally speaking not about that area. It's not about that particular financial situation or a relational situation or a health issue. Generally, it's about the lie that you're believing, the wound that you received. It's a red flag that he doesn't want you to fix the red flag. He wants you to follow the red flag. Go to the red flag. See what wound that red flag is sticking out of. Follow it down, find the wound, let him reveal it to you. This is not something you need to go digging for. And let him heal it. A lot of times what we'll find is that that wound has already been healed. But because we have not allowed him to remove the lies, we're still living as if the wound hasn't been healed. Hopefully you've had experiences like that before, something that we thought was going to be a huge problem. When we're faced with it, boom, not a big deal at all. You know, interviewing for a new job, and you figure, oh, you know, nobody's going to hire me. I don't have anything to offer. And we go into the interview, and it goes wonderfully well. And you are offered a much better job than you thought. Now, great, you know, that you dealt with, you know, you've overcome that, you went to the interview anyway, and you overcame that fear. But if you continue to believe the lie, you're going to start that job thinking, you know, they really shouldn't have hired me. I don't know if I'm qualified for this job. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. Don't know if I'm going to fit in. And, you know, we start acting according to what we are telling ourselves. Now, there's an opposite temperament to that, and this is where the temperament comes in. Somebody else might be listening to that little story and say, well, no, I would say, well, if they hired me, they were lucky to get me. And obviously I deserve to be hired by them. And so I'm going to just live up to and exceed what they expect automatically. Well, that's a temperament. And your beliefs that you react to that stress in that way is a reflection of your temperament, not your ability, not your thoughtfulness, or your having thought this through. And this is why it's so helpful to know what the temperaments are. It's because we can start seeing ourselves, oh, I do that. And one of the things we want to recognize is that we're not alone in our boat. There's not that many options. And there's not that many reactions on how we deal with life. We all have unique history and experience. But we can talk about commonalities and really deal with about 99% of the way the wounds come to us and the lies that we create around them. So we've been talking about a sanguine temperament, that their greatest strengths are that they're cheerful, fun, spontaneous, enthusiastic, and they like people. But their greatest weaknesses are that they're thoughtless, if you get in the way of their fun, they're careless and will forget if it's not important to them, and they're uncaring. They have a hard time empathizing. They like people, but they also use people because their goal is to be the center of attention, and they'll do whatever it takes to be the center of attention. So you're fine if you're giving them the attention they want, but if you're standing in their way, you're going to have a problem. So we talked about how they can be a people user, but that's their needy flesh, their needy crutch, how they need people. Is they use them. But they also have a protective crutch, and that is by being shallow. Though someone with a sanguine temperament value people, they do not naturally value friendships, deep friendships, which involve these, you know, we talked about the three different areas of crisis: relationships, friendships, and health. Having a friendship or a relationship takes a lot of work. And very often, sanguines, especially if you're, it's all about what they're receiving. They're not really good at recognizing the needs of their friends, their spouses, their children. And again, we're talking about a pure temperament here. Nobody is a pure temperament, but what we're looking at is a combination. We all have this. We all have a little bit of this. It's a matter of degree. And our goal as spirit beings is to not be controlled by our temperament. It's to recognize that this is the temperament of our soul, something we have, and to not let that provide the information by which we make decisions and live our lives. So that sanguine can be shallow in regards to relationships because they don't like to do work that does not give them self-gratification, that they find it hard to be selfless, to do something or to be in a relationship that they're giving more than they're receiving. They don't like to take risk. They don't like to work and put in time into something, again, that they're not getting more than they're giving out. Sanguines must be the one to set the boundaries. Relationships must center around them. In other words, if they come up with a great idea, let's go to the movies on Friday, and this sanguine contacts the rest of her friends, let's go to a movie on Friday. And everybody comes back, well, we've already seen all the movies, let's go out to dinner instead. The sanguine may say, no, that's all right, maybe next time. It wasn't her idea. It wasn't the sanguine's idea. So sometimes that can be a trigger to recognize that temperament, is unless it's their way, their idea, they're not interested. So what some of the things that you'll see as a part of their temperament is forgetfulness. And this is intentional, not consciously, but this is a tool that sanguines that are living out of their temperament often use. Don't depend on sanguines unless it's something they want to do or be involved in. In our scenario with the movie, they may say, okay, sure, that sounds like a good idea, but they just won't show up for dinner because it wasn't their idea. Rather than just saying, no, I'm not interested, they'll say, okay, and then at the last minute they'll cancel, they'll find something else to do, or they'll need to clean their refrigerator or wash their hair. Or they'll just forget. I made other plans. So this controls the other people's expectations and basically keeps them from being put in a position of responsibility or accountability. If amongst her friends, the sanguine has done this several times, the other friends are going to stop relying on her. They're not going to require her to be accountable for, wait a minute, we're at the restaurant, we're waiting for you. Why didn't you show up? You know, where are you? Oh, I decided to go to the movies after all, and I just found somebody else to go with. Well, why didn't you tell us? We're here at the restaurant waiting for you. And the sanguine will use that to control relationships and to keep from being held accountable. Again, maybe not consciously, but this is how the sanguine's mind, will, and emotions function. So how do you deal with the sanguine in that situation? Hopefully someone or all of those friends will challenge the sanguine and help her see how she is trying to control, how her choices are affecting others. For most of us, it's real hard unless that person is, we're truly invested in them, or they're related. We're not, and this is true across the board, we usually don't like taking risk to hold others accountable for the weaknesses of their temperament. But this is what it could look like. Well, you know, we're going to get together with you. We need to talk. We can't continue to do this. This is not good for you. And try to help our friends see this is not healthy. But we all have this situation. We're all in a similar situation. We're not picking on one temperament or another. And part of our challenge is to be in relationships where we can challenge one another and just separate our temperament from our identity. Some of us love to work on ourselves. Others know we're fine the way we are. Don't rock my boats. Don't rock my boat. Our goal here is simply to raise the issues, raise our awareness, and increase our recognition of the crutches we use. So the shallow flesh, the sanguine, doesn't want to be deep. Don't expect anything of me. Wants shallow relationships. Doesn't want to have anyone able to place any requirement on their life. Now, part of their strength is that they are fun. So their socially acceptable crutch is that they have a fun crutch. They're fun. A sanguine is a good storyteller and will go to great lengths to hold the attention of their audience. So they're great to have around. They're great to have at parties. People like having them go out to dinner with them. And even in a crisis situation, they will rally the troops, not to overcome an obstacle or achieve a goal, not to overcome the crisis, but to have a good time in spite of the crisis, regardless of the cost or the consequences. In other words, we're on the Titanic, but we're going to have a great time going down. But they will avoid situations where their actions will be reviewed or the validity of their stories questioned. In other words, if the goal is to make everybody happy, everything's a story. If their job is to tell a story, their life is a story. And unfortunately, their friends' lives is a story. So don't be surprised if it gets around back to you that, yeah, maybe you were in a car accident. Well, by the time it gets back to you from your sanguine friend, it may have been, yeah, she drove through a fruit stand and fruit was flying all over and the police came over and was asking her and this happened. And all of a sudden it's a huge story when all of a sudden you just rear-ended somebody who was parked behind you. It's not that they intend to lie. They're just telling a story. And this is, again, where it helps us to understand how the different temperaments work. And it's up to each one of us to decide, okay, how much do we want to correct that person and help them understand the difference between a hurting lie and a fun story? Stories are fine, but not when they hurt other people and not when they're about other people and not when they're being used to hide the truth. So we'll pick it up there next week, and hopefully we're getting enough understanding about what crutches are and how they relate to the temperament that we'll be able to move a little quicker through the rest of the temperaments. But I know this is really new for a lot of us. And we need to understand what the flesh is, what our crutches are, because God wants you to live free, to be able to run. And you can't if you're on crutches. He's not going to just kick the crutches out from under you. He's gracious, he's loving, and he wants what's best for you. But he is going to put you in situations where you need to throw down your crutch, where you need to decide, where you need to choose, where you need to feel like you've had enough and you want to be free. When he reveals those wounds and wants to heal them, and you have to decide whether you want to live free or you prefer your crutch. So we'll pick it up there next week. In the meantime, it's always good to hear from you. Contact me at DianeWeCanPrepare.org. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great weekend.